Blog Talk Radio.
And for the second time in one full calendar year, we shall sing, down, down the field goes the Syracuse. Watch those backs hit the line and go through. Hit. After last night's win, it was a win, over the Maryland Terrapins of Seth Kamens.
Yeah, kind of funny that
down,
you're seeing
down the field goes to Syracuse. Left to back, hit the line and go through. Anyway, go ahead.
I guess I don't have to mute you. Kind of funny for you to be singing after.
What is this, around the horn? You just mute
me? I'm the dictator. I'm the master of my own domain.
I
am the master of my domain. Pretty much. Yeah, congratulations on beating a 14-12 team by a basket at the buzzer. Well, not at the buzzer, because we can't hit a buzzer beater if our life depended on it. This is a really discouraging year. For the first time in, I don't really even remember, 25 years, 30, 26 years since I started following Maryland basketball, this will be the first year where we are not even in the ballpark of being discussed as a tournament team. And we don't deserve it. We had two chances last week. We outplayed Duke at Duke, couldn't win, played miserably last night against Syracuse, still should have won or could have won. And we are now 15-13. So I have no point, no discussion. I don't even think we're in IT. So
it's the CBI. Get it right. Anyway,
no,
how many times did I tell you it's
and then
the
CBI? Well, it's the NIT and then the CBI.
No, the CBI has replaced the NIT. They no longer call it the NIT.
I think there's both.
Is there?
I thought, yeah, because we were in the NIT last year.
I thought the NIT is now called the CBI. There are now three tournaments, and I'm just missing it up?
I think so.
Yeah, all right. Well, anyway, so we've gone back to our question of the week, and I know it's a little late, and I only thought about it about 10 minutes ago, but I've now posted it on the Seth and Sean Sports website, sent it out to a bunch of people, and please call in at 760-283-0846. We will start talking about this question at 7:30, so we'll give you some time to formulate answers and give us some calls. The question of the day. Now, I was going to save this for the last 5 minutes, but I think it's better served as a question. And hopefully next week we'll have Jared Swirling on. We're sorry to our loyal listeners. We didn't get the chance to get Mr. Swirling on this week. So the question today stems from Buck Showalter yesterday at the Baltimore Orioles training camp asking one of his players whether he knew who Frank Robinson was. So the player, and I'm trying to get the prospect's name was Josh Hart. So Frank Robinson was in Sarasota, Florida to speak with the Oriole players at spring training. Among those in attendance were Josh Hart, who was selected by the team in last year's amateur draft. As Robinson made his way around the facilities, Hart had the opportunity to meet the former All-Star. The minor problem was he had absolutely no idea who he was. So Buck Showalter asked the farmhand if he knew who Frank Robinson was. He didn't. So Buck Showalter told him he wanted a one-page report on him by tomorrow. And this is a hat tip to Larry Brown Sports. Well done, Buck Showalter. Well done. I mean, the history of baseball and the history of all the sports, there are people that you should know. Especially if you're an Oriole, there are people you should know in your own history. But all around sports, there are people that you should know. So my question to you, our listeners, and Seth and I have our own people that we will spout off in a couple of minutes at the bottom of the hour, is in the four major sports, and we'll even go to five. I mean, you can use soccer in there just so Seth can have something to talk about. In the five major sports, tennis, maybe, yeah, sure. We'll go all sports. In the sports world, who are the players that rookies and players that play the game should know coming up through the ranks? Who are those major players? So, obviously, Buck Showalter believes that Frank Robinson is one of those. I kind of agree with him. So please pen your thoughts on Seth and Sean Sports Radio on Facebook or Twitter at Seth and Sean. Give us a call at the bottom of the hour, 760-283-0846, and we'll talk about it because I think it's a great question because there definitely are people that I believe everybody should know, and obviously Buck Showalter thought the same.
Well, it is an interesting question. It's kind of a tough one to really come up with off the top of your head, and we can discuss. We'll discuss it a bit further, as you said, at 7:30. Prior to that, as we were hoping, Jared's Rolling from Bleacher Report, formerly of ESPN, and one of our favorite guests was going to appear. I think we're going to try and get him for next week. Unfortunately, unfortunately, he will not be on tonight. So what do we got? We have NFL Draft Combine. We have NBA trading deadline, yawn. We have the end of the Olympics. I guess I want to start with Olympic hockey. Canada shows up for the last two games after struggling to get past Latvia, dominates the U.S., although the score was only 1-0, simply because Jonathan Quick was the best player on the ice. And then
it's a sheet of ice.
I said ice. Easily dismissing Sweden in the finals. But more importantly, and it's been a tough week for Sean as a sports fan, his beloved Orange did lose two games this week and dropped from number one to number four in the polls. And his favorite team, the New York Islanders, lost their best player, John Tavares, for the rest of the year with a torn MCL. He gets hurt. Paul Martin gets hurt. There are a couple other players I forget off the top of my head who were injured during the Olympics. I can't imagine the NHL hockey teams are happy about this. Is this the end of the NHL in the Winter Olympics?
Well, actually, the Islanders lost two of their best players, in Franz Nielsen as well, who's out for 4 to 6 weeks.
I didn't know they had two.
That actually happened. Something that actually happened before the Olympics. So the Islanders are in trading deadline mode, and the trading deadline's in 2 weeks. So we're definitely there. Is this the end of the NHL and the Olympics? No. Absolutely not. There's no chance. I understand what hockey goes through and the fact that, I mean, Henrik Zetterberg also was hurt. The Sedins were hurt. And you're going to have injuries. But that's not to say those injuries would not have happened in the NHL.
That's also not to say they would have.
No, I understand that. But you can't control this stuff. I get it. But the PR that hockey gets, the NHL gets, from having the players in the Olympics far outweighs the negatives. And this is coming from a guy that whose team just lost their best player for the rest of the year. And if the Islanders were in the Stanley Cup race at this point, I'd probably have a different tune. But we're not. So I understand the Red Wings fans that believe that this should be the last time. But let me put it this way, Seth. Would you watch the Olympics and the Olympic hockey if the NHLers weren't in it?
No. Simply put, no.
Do you think anybody would watch the NHL for the 2 weeks while the Olympics went on?
The question is this. So, someone posed this, and I thought it was an interesting idea. Why don't they simply do what the NBA does and have the Hockey Olympics in the summer?
Well,
it's exactly what the NBA does. It gives them time.
I believe it is my feeling that with the NBA, you have, first of all, how do I pose this? There are more NHL players that play in the Olympics than there are NBA players.
Agreed.
That's number one. There's no doubt. And granted, there are more players in general, but there aren't really that many more. I mean, you have probably double, but if you look at every single NHL, if you look at every single Olympic team, you would be hard-pressed to find more than 25% that's not a Slovenia that were not NHL players. So what would happen, say, if you had, first of all, if you had that same risk in the off season and John Tavares tears his ACL, he's out for the whole year, does that make it any better? At least this way they got him for half the year.
Well, I mean, the injuries are at a given point, but you are interrupting the NHL regular season. There's less of an argument. I mean, there's always going to be an argument. Mark Cuban makes it every year with Dirk Nowitzki playing for Germany. Luckily or unluckily for Mark, there's nobody else on his team that anyone has any great interest in to play for the Olympics at this point. Well, Sean Marion maybe 10 years ago, Vince Carter 10 years ago. But they are, you know, the reality is Charles Wang, who is the owner of – it's Wang, right? The owner of the Islanders?
Yep.
Now, is paying John Tavares $6 million a year. Yeah, U.S. hockey or Canadian hockey is not paying for John Tavares. You know, he does belong to the Islanders. And it's very easy to see their argument. Now, don't get me wrong. I am not in favor of it. The best thing to me about the Winter Olympics, outside of some of that snowcross stuff, which is just badass, but is watching Olympic hockey. And if I don't know the players, I am not going to be interested in watching. You know, the time of the Miracle on Ice of the 80 team where they're all collegiate players, I don't have the time nor the inclination to sit and learn.
But let me go a step further, okay? First of all, I don't believe you're going to get – the NHL, the Olympic team in 1980, those players, A, took off an entire year before they played in the Olympics. I don't think you're going to get those players taking off a year again. I don't think it's the same mindset. I think you're going to be taking players that are off collegiate teams who are still prospects of these NHL teams. So does it really matter? It's not the superstar, I get that. But it's still the same argument. And it's still the same concept. And again, it goes back to the same thing. NHL, this is about money, okay? It will always be about money because that's what professional sports are about. And I've come to grips with that. It's hard for me to come to grips with it, but it is. And the Olympics are about money, too. Don't anybody mistake it. It's about money. So let's say the Olympics take place with college players who are still prospects and they suffer injuries. Same problem. Not multi-million problem, but still the same problem. Second of all, are those players going to want to play? Third, how are you going to tell the players from other countries where this means a lot more, especially the Alex Ovechkins who said to the NHL, I will sit out the entire year in order to play in the Olympics. And my friends and I debated which is bigger, the Stanley Cup or the Olympic gold. And I think that really depends on what country you're from.
I agree.
I think for the U.S. and Canada, it's the Stanley Cup. I think if it's Europe or Asia, it's the gold medal. And I think players would be more apt to take off the entire year to play for the Olympics. And I think you'll see a widespread of players go to the KHL for that year or sit out. And is that what Gary Bettman wants? I don't think so. Nobody's going to watch the NHL during that week anyway, if that's the case. And to tell you the truth, it's only if you're talking about disrupting the season, you are only taking off 8 days.
2 weeks.
No, less. Because generally that's the All-Star break, and this year they don't have it.
So I was going to say 2 days before the tournament, 2 days after. So, I mean, I agree with you. I truly hope that 4 years from now in South Korea, we are watching TJ Oshie doing his shootout against, I guess it'll be Carey Price. It was a fun tournament. It was a disappointment. What happened to the U.S. in the last two games? And my feeling was that, I mean, maybe they were simply outplayed against Canada and were just demoralized going into the Finland game. And especially after Finland scored, after Patrick Kane missed the two penalty shots, they let up one power play goal and then just kind of folded. Was it just that Canada was that much better? Or did the U.S. kind of fold a bit in that semifinal game?
Well, I think we talked about it with Keegan. I certainly brought up the point, and I brought it up to you. The only way that the U.S. was going to win was based on precisionness, being precise, playing as a team. Because talent level, Canada was far superior, and they played far faster. If there's one thing that you noticed on the ice, it was that Canada was so much faster than the U.S., especially on the blue line. And that will actually – the experience that the U.S. had this year, if they actually do use pros in 2018, will be fantastic because the young back line, Kevin Shatterick, next time they'll be Seth Jones, will improve with the experience that they got. Shatterick was 24 years old. I mean, there was nobody on Canada. I think we said this last time, that the talent level on Canada was so much superior that the U.S. had the two players from their respective teams that would be considered the best player on their team. Well, I believe every player on Canada would have been the best player on their team. And that's a, except for Jonathan Quick, who kept them in it, there was a big discrepancy in talent level. But I'll tell you one thing, give credit to Carey Price, because I certainly wasn't during the tournament and I wasn't before it. He backstopped very well. He played very well in the U.S. game. And he played very well in the Sweden game, too.
What are you going to be the rest of, what other lasting memories do you have from these Winter Olympics?
Well, the first lasting memory I have is that Lindsey Vonn didn't make it. That's number one. Number two, Shaun White not meddling. Number three, the U.S. being thoroughly outplayed in hockey. I loved the opening ceremony this year. Didn't watch very much of it, but I did love what I did see. Other than that, my biggest lasting memory is that I didn't watch it. I don't remember most of it. What about yourself?
Nothing. I did see a decent amount of it due to, well, in part, that I was injured for most of it and couldn't and not supposed to be walking around. So I did see a lot, but there is no... There's no Sarah Hughes moment for me. There's no U.S. I mean, I guess the U.S. women's hockey, I guess the women's U.S. Canada game with the U.S. up 2-0 with 3 minutes to go would probably be the most defining moment of the Olympics to me. Kind of reading the articles about the Russian hotels and all, you know, everything. And kind of my curiosity is more, what the heck is going to happen in Sochi now? They spent supposedly somewhere in the means of, what, $50 billion on this?
Yeah, $51.9 billion.
Well, and now what's going to happen?
What do you mean?
Is this going to become a tourist attraction? Probably not. It's the southern tip of Russia. You know, if I want to go hit the beach, I'm not flying 15 hours. I am, you know, one of the issues we see, and we don't really discuss it very often, are the financial ramifications of these places after the Olympics. You know, they spend all this money in Vancouver and in Salt Lake and in Athens and Sydney and in Barcelona. Now, if my recollection is correct, the last profitable Olympic Games were the LA Olympics in 1984, where you actually had like the McDonald's, you know, marketing in McDonald's logo on everything. And you know, Russia is not exactly in a financial powerhouse situation at this point. I'm not sure spending $50 billion to, you know, kind of to reinvent, not reinvent, to re-promote their greatness or their you know, bring them back to the world stage, quote unquote, was
okay,
really
well,
the best.
I have the actual the stats. Which
okay.
And surprisingly, there have been quite a number of profitable Olympics, believe it or not.
That surprises
me. London was profitable.
52.8
million pounds, which is about $100 million. Not bad. Beijing, $146 million profitable. Salt Lake was $101 million profitable.
That doesn't sound right, actually.
Well,
where are you getting these numbers from?
I'm getting them from Wikipedia, but they are quoting, the Salt Lake one quotes the New York Times. I got to think that's probably true.
Okay.
Atlanta was 10, oh, Sydney broke even. Atlanta was plus 10 million. Barcelona was plus 10 million. Seoul was plus 300 million, which was a record profit for government-run Olympics. Calgary was plus 32 million Canadian, which I believe at the time would have been 16 million American. LA was 250, and then Sarajevo was plus 10. So the losses, Vancouver was a break-even. Torino was minus 3.2. Now, Athens was minus $14 billion with a B. That's unbelievable.
Well,
and Albertville was – that was all – Wikipedia says the cost of the 2004 Summer Games has been cited as a contributor to the Greek debt crisis. Many
yeah.
of the venues lie vacant and rotting, and the independent reports use reports as many as 21 out of the 22 arenas are unused.
Yeah, I really find those numbers hard to believe. I know Montreal took 30 years to actually pay off their debt from the 76 Olympics.
They did. They paid it off in 2006, and they lost $990 million Canadian.
Vancouver, out of what I remember, was ruined after the Olympics. Now, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I find it genuinely surprising if all these places turn profits based on this.
Now, I think it really depends, Seth, I think it really depends on what they define as a profit. Too.
Right, I understand.
So,
I realized
I mean,
as soon as I said it.
So I can look at what Wikipedia defines as a profit.
We only have an hour show tonight, so.
Well, I'm just going to read the opening paragraph. It's very quick. Modern U.S. Olympic teams have produced profits and losses for host cities with the table below the hard cost of the game. Due to the multitude of reporting methods, the table below contains both the operating and total final costs, which include various infrastructure upgrades and securities, known or estimated. The net loss or net gain, which is what I quoted before, are measured against the operating budgets. Intangible costs, such as environment and society, and total benefits through tourism, are not included here. So that's how they define profit. So, you know what? It may or may not. I mean, but that's how it's being used. But I understand what you're saying. I mean, right now, Norway has been asked, Oslo has been asked to host the games. Not Oslo, I'm sorry, it's another town. I believe it's like 20 miles north of Oslo. Has been asked to host the Winter Olympics, and they, resoundingly, 80% of the citizens of that city, I'm going to get the city name, have said no way. They don't want it. In 2020. So that should just tell you enough right there, right?
I mean, For all intents and purposes.
2022,
That's Qatar.
No,
and that's an absolute,
2022 Winter, it's Oslo. 2022 Olympic Games.
Oh, the 2022 is the World Cup, is in Qatar. And they're already saying that may not come through. Because
right.
people are
well,
dying
that,
trying to build it.
That's for safety reasons.
Yeah. So
they asked Oslo to do this in 2022, like Lillehammer, and they're saying, no way. They're like, we don't want the budget. We don't want to spend the money. We're having enough fiscal crisis without this. We don't want it. And that goes to your point, right? I mean, who wants it? $51.9 billion was spent on the Sochi Olympics. $5.9 billion, with a B, was spent on one road.
Did the road work?
Just think about that. Of course it worked. It was from Moscow to Sochi. That's a pretty long road.
I was going to say, that is a long road.
But I'm kind of wondering what I'm going to go look this up, what the interstate highway system, when Eisenhower did it, cost. Because I have to think it probably cost less than $5.9 billion.
I would think so. Or I would think so at that point. Maybe not, obviously, for adjusted, but
total cost
it would be
in construction up. Okay, it was $425 billion. So obviously more. My bad.
It's okay.
That's 3,000 miles.
I'm impressed. You knew Eisenhower put together the.
I honestly think that Eisenhower's interstate highway structure in the U.S. is the greatest achievement of architectural or economic growth in this country's history. I am thoroughly amazed that if you looked at a map, that every street, every highway hits another one. Thoroughly impressed by them, that they were able to do that. It's like putting a jigsaw puzzle together without knowing where the heck the pieces were going. I think it's the most amazing achievement, one of the more amazing achievements of the 20th century.
And to think people call in and people listen to our show to learn about sports, but no. We go beyond. We talk architecture. We talk infrastructure. We are the sophisticated radio show.
Wow. Should we look up the definition of sophisticated? Because I'm not
probably
sure we qualify.
Probably not. Anyone who knows us knows that is far from where we lie.
Sophisticated.
Sophisticated. So on to the question of the day. I was going to say we're going to talk about the NBA trade deadline, but to be perfectly honest, there's really not very much to talk about. Evan Turner is a Pacer. That's really about it. Nothing.
I think
really
it's more important the guys that didn't get traded rather than the guys that did.
Yeah, the two names that come to mind, of course, Rajon Rondo in Boston, Kevin Love in Minnesota. And it does, and you know, we'll see. They will be free agents in 2015. And, you know, we may talk about this at a later point. You know, everyone is under the impression that all these players, Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, LeBron James, Carmelo Anthony, are all going to opt out after this year. What if they don't? Look at that 2015 class. That is, you could rebuild the Knicks in one day.
But you and I both know in order to make more money, they're going to opt out this year.
Yes, I understand that they will. But, okay. You know, if you want to delay it a year, now if I'm Carmelo, I'm running, screaming, doing whatever I have to do to get out of there. But I do think he will probably resign. I shouldn't say I have no clue what he's going to do. I don't have the slightest.
You're also crying after watching last night's Dirk Nowitzki basketball do like six jumps and then go in as the buzzer sounded. So, and then deciding that having a handgun is a good idea. Not one, not two, but three.
Well, if you were the point guard for the Knicks, wouldn't you want to put a gun in your head at this point?
Yeah, oh, okay. That goes a little far. I think it's
a little
too soon.
Too
soon? Especially since he pointed at his wife. It's a little too soon.
Okay. That is true. All right, on to our question of the day. Because I think that's the obvious trade. That's the obvious transition.
Yeah.
Yeah, as Mr. Palmer so eloquently stated earlier, Buck Showalter had one of his star prospects write a one-page paper about Frank Robinson. Now, whether Frank Robbins, you know, because he didn't know who he is, Frank Robbins is, of course, all-time great, was fifth, I believe, retired as the second or third on the home run list, because he was fifth for many years behind Mays, Babe Ruth, Hank Aaron, and I'm forgetting the fourth off the top of my head. Or maybe it was fourth.
Well, the top five for a while. Now, remember, Robinson retired before Mays. So Robinson was third. Then Mays took over as third behind and Aaron actually, I believe, retired after Robinson, but I think he broke Robinson before. So when Aaron
retired
Ruth,
in 77,
Robinson,
I think. Right. It was
right.
Yeah,
but
it was Aaron
Ruth,
had Mays, Robinson.
Right, but I think he had more than 586 for a very long time, considering he had 714. So
okay.
I think he overtook Robinson earlier. So I think he was third, then Mays overtook Robinson, and number five was always Harmon Killebrew with 573.
There you go. And, of course, these numbers have long
been I knew that. But, because those five were the five that we had growing up.
Right.
Forever. Forever
for
until 15 Mark
years,
McGwire
for 15
broke.
Years, those were the same. For 15 years, those were the same numbers. Now,
right.
Of course, you have Bonds and McGwire and Jim Thome,
A-Rod,
and you know, obviously
Sammy Sosa has 600.
Yeah, so
yeah,
it doesn't quite have the same
cachet.
It doesn't quite have the same meaning or cachet. So, kind of going back to your question. So who are the athletes? I guess we'll start with baseball. There's one or two that come to mind right off the top of my head that rookies should know coming up.
All right, who you got?
The two that come to my mind are Josh Gibson and Roberto Clemente. Gibson.
Wait, those are the two? I'm
as
surprised
good as any.
Gibson made it over Jackie Robinson.
Well, I think Jackie Robinson's a no-brainer. I think everyone knows who Jackie Robinson is.
Okay.
I don't think there is an athlete who does not at least know who Jackie Robinson is at this point.
Okay, that's fair.
The bigger question is, do you know who broke the barrier in basketball and football and hockey, not in baseball?
That's fair. Okay.
Gibson, because Gibson was probably the greatest player in the Negro League's history. Potentially could have been among the greatest of all time in the majors. We will never know, obviously. Clemente, probably the first, truly great Latin player, but kind of the inspiration for a lot of the Latin players coming from Nicaragua. And then, of course, the way he died, gets his 3,000th hit and then dies in a humanitarian plane crash going forward. And a guy who, you know, he played on the same team, I want to say, for 15 years, won a championship, I guess, in 60 with the Miracle Pirates. I think that's kind of how you have to break it out into why rookie, you know, to know Babe Ruth. Well, everybody knows who Babe Ruth is. Everyone knows who Garrick is. So I think you have to kind of give why people should know these, why these players should be known.
I agree with you.
So who are yours?
Well, I think you stole my thunder with Clemente, because I definitely think that he needs to be in there. I mean, no doubt in my mind, he should definitely be on that list. I do think Babe Ruth needs to be on that list. I think everybody does know him, but I think he needs to be on there. I also agree with you in the realm of Jackie Robinson, obviously. I don't necessarily believe that everybody needs to know who Josh Gibson is. Maybe that's just me. I think Clemente is definitely more important. I actually think Frank Robinson is more important. Frank Robinson was the first African-American manager. He was also probably, until Willie Mays, the best African-American Major League Baseball player. Back-to-back MVPs, 586 home runs, has been an executive for the last 20 years in Major League Baseball. I think that I would love to read the one-page report that Showalter asked this rookie to do, because I think he'll be astounded. And I really think that for each team, it's different. I mean, if you're a Mets, you come up in the Mets system and you don't know who Tom Seaver is, that's a problem. If you come up in the Brooklyn Dodgers system and you don't know who Pee Wee Reese is, that's a problem. Or Sandy Koufax. So, I mean, there are different I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, the problem is I don't think people care.
Well, you know, and that's the point.
Yeah.
Well, I'm serious. I think that's the point. I don't think this guy cared who Frank Robinson was.
Do you think he cares now that he wrote a one-page paper?
I think that's what Buck Showalter's saying, is that you should care. You should learn about your history. You should, I mean, we as Americans, and I'll say this for any country, learn about our history. I'm a lawyer. I learned who Clarence Darrow is. I know who John Marshall is. He's the first Supreme Court justice. I know who's in my profession and who made my profession what it is today.
Well, wait
These
a minute.
Players,
am I supposed to know who Mr. Ernst or Mr. Young is?
No, but if Mr. Ernst or Mr. Young, let's put it this way. If Mr. Ernst or Mr. Young was part of the Dred Scott decision or John Brown decision,
I'm joking. I am abundantly aware of who John Marshall is.
Right, but that's what I'm saying. I mean, if it's made history, I hate to depreciate your profession, but it's not often that an accountant makes history.
Well, maybe I'm the first accountant to host his own sports radio show. Does that make me memorable?
So maybe someday people will be studying you.
That's the dream.
Oh, my God, that's the nightmare. Okay, so we went through baseball. We went through baseball. Okay, so I'm going to go first on basketball.
I'm sorry.
There's one more baseball player that I think everybody should know, that I think people don't know, and that's Larry Doby, who is the first American League African-American player. And I think people should know him. Oh, and I'm sorry, and I forgot one other. But let's say Larry Doby, because of that, is I think he gets underscored because of Jackie Robinson. And last but not least, I think everybody needs to know what Brian Tricky was. I don't think people will, but I think people should. Okay, let's go on to basketball. Basketball, I think that there are two players. I think most people know the first one, and that would be Magic Johnson. For what he's done, not only on the court, but what he's done off the court, too. Because he is by far the best product in the business world that the NBA has ever produced. And he sets the tone. That's number one. Number two, everybody needs to know who Bill Russell is. Bill Russell, A, is the epitome of winning. What, 10 championships? One for each finger of the thumb?
11 in 13 years.
11 in 13 years? All right, so add one for the pinky toe.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact of the matter is he endured so much, was such a great player, and he was the consummate team player that I think that every player in the NBA should know he is. And I believe that every player, I would say 95% of the people do. Those are the two players. And I don't think Michael Jordan goes into that at all. And by the way, we do have some responses from our Facebook, so I'm going to go into those as we go through the sports because I think that's the applicable way. We did have from Aaron DiCaprio out in Colorado, Babe Ruth and Mickey Mantle and Roberto Clemente. And he used Babe Ruth is self-explanatory, Roberto Clemente is self-explanatory. He said for Mickey Mantle, he goes, because that's what a waste was, because he was always drunk. Well, I don't see that as a bad thing. I think you have to understand that sometimes you can waste. What's the line from A Bronx Tale? The worst thing in life is wasted talent.
I'm aware.
And
I am the epitome of it.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks. All right, so those are the baseball ones so far. What do you got for basketball, my friend?
Well, basketball, Russell was the only no-brainer for me. I think you kind of explained pretty eloquently why. The other, and I wouldn't even say as a player. I'd almost look at it from a coaching perspective, would be John Wooden. And obviously he was college basketball, not pro. 10 championships in 12 years, but his pyramid of teamwork and the way he's able to bring in everyone. Whether you were a hippie or a guy who became a hippie like Walton or Lou Alcindor who became Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, he was able to transition extraordinarily well because what he taught really went back to his Midwestern roots. And it kind of flows no matter what area of life you're in. If you failure to plan is planning to fail, all these corny, things, they're actually all true. And all the every player from UCLA who was under him, whether they liked him or hated him when he was the coach, and there was a bit of both, all look back with him all revere him is the best way to put it.
Yeah,
those would be
do you think every coach needs to know John Wooden, or do you think every player needs to know? Because I have a hard time with players today. I understand what you're saying, and I understand that it does reverberate to today, and it does translate to today. But I have a hard time, and Aaron brought this up when I said Frank Robinson was the first African-American manager. If that's all he was, and he wasn't a player, it didn't hit 586 home runs, and certainly wasn't in the Baltimore Orioles camp at the time, would it behoove a player to know every manager or to know the best of managers? I mean, a guy that grows up in Baltimore, like Kevin Durant's a bad example, but let's say Carmelo Anthony. Well, let's use Kevin Durant or Carmelo Anthony, both from Baltimore. Then and only going 1 year and then out, knowing who John Wooden is a little bit of a stretch than them knowing who Magic Johnson or Bill Russell.
Magic Johnson, I think, is kind of a strange, because everyone knows who Magic Johnson is.
But they don't know what he has become. They know of him as a player.
No, I think they know. I mean, you see him, he's on television all the time. I think you know who he is. I think everyone kind of knows, that he's also that he's recovered, not recovered, but that, the way he dealt with the HIV virus has obviously been, I have no arguing with it, obviously. But I think he's so prevalent that I don't think, I think everyone knows him.
Okay, I can go with that.
Wooden, just because I think what he teaches works in any era. And I think that's why it's important.
I can definitely see that. Okay, so Rick Maltese, one of my coworkers and hopeful listener to the program, says Bill Russell was the ultimate winner, more rings than anyone ever in the sport. And that's why people should know who he is. And I totally agree. I mean, it's not the reason you should know who Frank Corsetti is in baseball, but it is the reason you need to know who Bill Russell is in basketball. So let's move on to hockey. Anybody that you see that needs to be known?
Again, the hard part with hockey is there aren't as many legendary stars to go back that far back. I mean, yes, Maurice Richard was an unbelievable player, but what lasting influence did he have beyond the hockey rink? I don't know. Gordie Howe. Same. I guess the name that comes to mind, because he transformed his position more than I think any other player did, and you're more of a hockey expert than I am, would Bobby Orr, the defense considered almost unanimously the greatest defenseman, I think, of all time with the Bruins, because he changed the way people played defense. I mean, you can bring up, I guess, who was it, Jacques Plante was the first to use the mask, or Glenn Hall. But to me, Bobby Orr, everyone is going to know Wayne Gretzky. I don't know how a hockey player couldn't. So, you know, to go back to Howie Morenz or Howie Shore, I think you're going too far back. I mean, maybe it's just because we're in the U.S. and not in Canada. Historic impact of these guys seems to be minuscule compared to the historical impact of other athletes in other sports.
I'd agree with you. I think Gretzky's the only guy. I understand why you think that everybody knows he is. I think people need to realize, or players should realize, why Gretzky was so good. And it wasn't the fact that he scored goals. It's the fact that he assisted on so many. And he took more pleasure, and he has said this numerous times, I took more pleasure in assisting than I ever did in scoring. And I think that's a big thing to hold. Is that's why I think people should know who Wayne Gretzky is, not necessarily because he's the great one, but rather he took more. And if you look at Sidney Crosby, and trust me, I'm not the biggest Sidney Crosby fan, but the best players in hockey, Steve Yzerman, along the route, were not goal scorers. The only great, truly great goal scorer was Gordie Howe, but he also played 26 years. So, to me, it's even Mario Lemieux took much more pleasure in passing the puck than he ever did in scoring. So, I think that's what you need to take away in hockey. So, let's go to football. I have a couple of players in football. I think everybody needs to know who Gale Sayers is. And I think you need to know who Gale Sayers is because you can, especially in football, you have to realize how quickly your career can end. So you have to do what you can do when you do it, which is why I never have a problem with a player trying to get more money. Hold out. Look, the NFL is a zero-sum game. There are no guaranteed contracts. You want to hold out? I'm not all that big of a fan of it, but I completely understand it. One injury and you're done. That's Gale Sayers. Number one. Number two, I think every player needs to know who Jim Brown is. I think most players do, but I think it's very important to know who Jim Brown is, more than just about anybody else in any other sport, except for one, which we'll get to in a second. And last but not least, if you're a football player, you need to know who Pete Rozelle was. Pete Rozelle made football what it is. I don't think many players know who Pete Rozelle is, but I think they should.
Well, it actually kind of brings me back to a thought that someone we didn't bring up, because when you bring up a Curt Flood.
Okay, fair enough.
Back in baseball, who challenged the free agent statute and pretty much lost his career because of it. Along with Marvin Miller, who was obviously the attorney that really opened up the game. And in kind of revenge, Marvin Miller is still not made the Hall of Fame. But that's a discussion for
now. And now he's passed away.
Now he's dead. Jim Brown, to me, is the easiest pick out of any of these sports because, number one, he was probably the greatest athlete of all time. Number two, he quit at his prime because he could. Number three, the activism that he's had throughout his career, throughout his lifetime, as opposed to a lot of these athletes who are afraid to take a stand because they're afraid to lose the advertising dollar. Brown never quite had that, never quite saw it that way. Gale Sayers, Pete Rozelle, I agree on. Gale Sayers, I'm kind of more iffy. But to me, it's really Jim Brown and then everybody else. If you kind of want to go back further, you can kind of go back to a Jim Thorpe. But it's a bit of a harder comparison. Jim Thorpe was probably the greatest athlete of the first 50 years of the century. And he was a football player at Carlisle, and he played temporarily professional, and then lost his gold medals because he'd given up his amateur status. But to me, it's Jim Brown and then everybody else.
So Rick Maltez seconds or thirds to Jim Brown, just the greatest football player of all time. So let's go to other sports, and we can use them as a conglomerate. I don't think we need to.
Okay.
You can put in soccer. You can put in tennis. You can put in boxing. You can put in any of these if you want. I have a couple. I think if for women's tennis, you need to know who Martina Navratilova is. You need to know who Billie Jean King is. In fact, I think Billie Jean King may be one of the most important people to know in all sports for what she did for women. Title IX. Unbelievable presence. And I would say that for all women's sports, Billie Jean King is right up there along with Martina Navratilova.
Continue. I'll just add on at the end.
Well, I think those two are unbelievable people. I think they overcame so much in what they did, and they need to be recognized. You move over to boxing, and the greatest, if you don't know who the greatest is, you shouldn't be a boxing fan. You shouldn't be a boxer. You
shouldn't be a sports fan. And despite what he says, it's not Floyd Mayweather.
Muhammad Ali today actually is the 50th anniversary.
Yeah, that was going to be my discussion point at the end. Another name I want to throw out there, not in the boxing realm, although you probably should, Joe Louis, who is one of the greatest heavyweights of all time, and then went into the Army because it was his duty, and then lost all his money while he was in the Army. And then pretty for all intents and purposes had to become a professional wrestler and had to become a greeter at the casinos, a man who deserved a better fate.
Agreed. And if you, on that note, there's a guy that I probably missed in baseball, actually two guys, Bob Feller and Ted Williams, for very much the similar reason, that they just served their country at a time where they were in their prime. They said, you know what, it's more important. It's much more important to do this. So go ahead, and I have one more, but I'll wait till you're done. Go ahead.
The other name, I'm trying to think of the other names that come to mind, tennis, Arthur Ashe.
Yep.
Great humanitarian.
That's why I brought in tennis, just for you.
Ah, thanks, appreciate it. Really great humanitarian. Died tragically of the AIDS virus after a blood transfusion. Other names that come to mind in track and field, Tommy Smith and John Carlos, the 68 Olympics, where they did the power salute. I mean, again, you may not agree or disagree. You may not agree with everything. You may disagree with some of the views, but these are people that you should know. And, you know, those are the names that often, again, we're kind of throwing this off the top of our heads, or yeah. I am anyway.
So in soccer, I'm thinking Pele.
Sure.
You need to know who Pele is. You absolutely need to know who Pele is. And I have one more in track and field, and that's Jesse Owens. If you're a runner and you don't know who Jesse Owens is, and you're winning gold medals and you're facing adversity, Jesse Owens was Jackie Robinson before Jackie Robinson. I thoroughly believe that. That is a man. You talk about Joe Louis losing all of his money. Jesse Owens lost all of his, too. And in a time where African Americans were not able to make the same amount of money they would today, he held his head high and declared bankruptcy and did what he needed to do. So he would be the one other guy. And I'm sure we're missing some. So if you have any, please post them on our Facebook. Please ignore the picture that's there. I have no idea how that became the picture with our but she is rather hot. So if you want to take a look, go ahead. Seth and Sean Sports on Facebook. At Seth
I assume that's your date. I assume that's your date tonight.
Yeah, right. At Seth and Sean on Twitter, I wish. And SethandSeanSports@gmail.com. So we have about five more minutes. This was a great discussion. We'll bring back the question of the day every week from now on. We'll post it hopefully on Sunday night so we can give our listeners 48 hours to come up rather than 48 seconds, which we did tonight. And we'll go from there. But Seth, take it away with your Sunday listing because I know you want to talk about it.
Well, yeah, I was going to bring up to Michael Sam and Jason Collins, but I just want to, 50 years ago, probably one of the more important sporting events in the modern era, Cassius Clay at that point, a heavy underdog, would knock out in the sixth round Sonny Liston to win the World Heavyweight Championship up in Lewiston, Maine. It would be the first of three reigns for Cassius Clay, who would, of course, become Muhammad Ali, be in jail for 2.5 years and during the part of his prime, and someone who really became more than a boxer, more than an athlete, and is probably seen as the most legendary living athlete today, one of the most legendary human beings, living human beings today. And everything kind of started with a sixth-round knockout of Sonny Liston. And ironically, the thought was that actually Liston was going to, demolish him. And then when he was losing, put some kind of liquid on his gloves. So Muhammad had to actually run around for rounds four and five, because he was unable to see. And they almost stopped the fight. Of course, Muhammad, you know, stayed on too long. The three great fights with Frazier, the thrill in Manila against the Rumble in the Jungle, against George Foreman. But you know, then he would go on too long. The fight Leon Spinks, the fight Ken Norton, you know, past his prime, Larry Holmes would finally end it, put him out of his misery. But a man of an incredible talent, incredible personality, and in grace, you know, even many years later while dealing with Parkinson's. So happy anniversary to the greatest.
All right, so I guess I'm up.
Yep.
Philadelphia Phillies, shame on you. And I mean it beyond everything. The way that the Major League Baseball draft is run is that you have high school players that come out either after their freshman, junior, or senior year. Once they commit to a college, they have to stay for 3 years. So they have the chance to come out after junior year or after senior year or before they even enter. There's an unwritten rule. So what happens is because they want to keep their amateur status, players basically say that they take advice. So Scott Boras is an advisor. He's not an agent for the team. He hasn't signed with anybody. He doesn't sign these players until they have signed their contract. They are just advisors. And from what I know and from what I've read, there is an unwritten rule that advisors do talk to the teams. Now, they shouldn't. The rule is that they shouldn't. But they do. And every team knows this. Except the Phillies, who decided to punish two players. Ben Welter was drafted in the fifth round by the Phillies in the 2013 MLB draft. After failing negotiations with the club, Welter decided that it was his best interest to return to Oregon State. No problem, generally, for his senior season. The Phillies, having felt spurned after using a high draft pick, reported Welter's agent-related conduct to the NCAA. And Welter is now going to have to sit 20% of the season because he sought assistance of counsel. From an attorney, I wouldn't want a junior in high school being negotiating against me. I want to talk to another attorney. He understands my language. He understands what I'm saying. It's a more even playing field. It's the way the business is run. And the Phillies, who basically don't have a requirement for anybody under 30 on their team, since Ruben Amaro likes the old AARP team, decided to just piss and moan and go to the NCAA. Shame on you, Philadelphia. Just another reason why I can't stand your city.
For Sean Palmer, Seth Kamens, BackSportsPage.com, Blog Talk Radio. See you next week.
See ya.